going for hours.
Eric.
Hey, Charles.
Awesome tie-dye, man.
Yes, yeah, another one, yeah. For every expert to expert, another tie-dye.
Cool. So what's going on today?
Yes, so today we are meeting with VJ and Chris.
Howdy.
Hello.
Hello.
And we're talking about BASIC, the programming language BASIC.
Small BASIC.
Small BASIC, yes.
Okay.
So not to confuse with tiny BASIC, miniature BASIC, or
visual BASIC.
Okay. So Chris Anderson has been on Channel 9 many a time. You can introduce yourself yet again if you'd like.
So I'm Chris Anderson. I work on the Oslo team, spending a lot of time trying to figure out how we apply all this great modeling stuff to the interwebs. We're trying to make the tubes more model-driven. And so that's what I spend my days on. Spend a bunch of time on the DSL frameworks and things like that that we announced at PDC as well.
Excellent.
So.
Hi, I'm VJ. I'm a developer also on Oslo. And the thing I try to do is prevent Chris from clogging the tubes, which is, you know, representing models in a much more manageable format, which is textual. And so I write the editor for the textual models.
Outstanding.
So talk about models. So what is the difference between modeling and programming?
So I had a very fun and interesting experience of going to a Microsoft conference where I made the bold statement that all programming is modeling. And that C# is a DSL for modeling. And it just so happens that the domain that it models is so general purpose, people think about it differently. And so IL is a declarative model-driven platform. And people looked at that and said, well, you obviously haven't thought very hard about what you're doing. But it is interesting because I think modeling is one of these things that it's a little bit in the eye of the beholder. One person's abstraction is another person's low-level system. What I think about it is getting people to think at a higher and higher abstraction level, getting more of their program in data, structured data. And the move from x86 code to IL was a great step along this. Like, now you can inspect your program, you can look at the dependencies, the call trees, you can do tons of analysis. It's better, and with Oslo we're going even to the next level up, where it becomes more transparent, more discoverable, more of your program is in this representation.
No, I 100% agree with you. I mean, for the assembly programmer, C is a declarative language. Right?
Exactly. Yes. Yes.
It's all relative. So, but and even there, like x86 is perfectly. It's a code as data, right? I can analyze my binaries. So,
yes. Yes.
So in the end, it's all
It's all relative.
Yep. Excellent. All right.
So the processor is a runtime.
Yes.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah. What's the CPU that does a Lisp interpreter, a Lisp execution CPU?
Yeah,
there's one of those, right?
Yeah.
I assume you know.
List machines, yeah.
Yeah.
Great.
It's
all relative. So let's kind of, you know, go back down to BASIC. So
okay.
Why did you kind of, you know, start your small BASIC project?
Okay, well, this would go back to a little bit of history here. So about 14, 15 months ago, August 2007. Was that? Wow. Okay, August 2007. Someone was sent out an email to the ideas discussion alias, and they were talking about this article that was published, Why Johnny Cannot Code. And there were lots and lots of good feedback and ideas exchanged in that distribution list about people talking about their old, like when they started programming, how they discovered programming, and they got their first computer, and QBASIC was installed in their computer, and they picked up the manual, and they started programming. And then they were talking about how their kids today aren't able to do so, and they have other distractions that they get involved in, like games and things like that, that come installed with Windows today. And it was rightfully pointed out that the success for QBASIC was threefold. One was that it was constantly available, anytime, anywhere. Anytime somebody had a machine, QBASIC was available. It was very simple to use, and there was the manual. It was not very hard. It was easy to pick up. And then the third thing was there was nothing else fun to do. And so people were programming, because programming was fun. And today there are other fun things to do, and so not a lot of people start programming, and you can see the decline in computer science and all of that stuff. All great points. And someone suggested maybe we should just go back to the basics and create a programming language which is like BASIC and install it with Windows, and I thought that was a great idea. So thought about it, why Visual Basic is not catering to that kind of needs, and kind of realized that Visual Basic has gone, has evolved quite a way, and it's become very, very powerful and taken programming concepts much farther. Becoming like that has led to beginners feeling a little bit of angst or feeling intimidated or touching a Visual Basic. Also, the environment isn't that very friendly either. So I came up with this idea, this proposal of doing something very simple and bundling it with Windows, and went and presented it to a bunch of people. And of course, this was all just PowerPoint presentations, right? And PowerPoint presentations, you know how Microsoft is. People want to see real code. They want to see something running. And so it didn't really make that much of traction. So I decided, okay, well, what can I do to make traction? And that's when I thought, okay, well, I'll just go code it up. And that's where it started. So I wrote this really simple...
Just like Bill, right?
Yeah, a lot of people, any new technology that comes out from Microsoft is somebody's prototype, right? Mm. So I prototyped this really simple environment, got a lot of help from a lot of compiler developers around who wrote me the first initial compiler, and then combined them together, and there was this really nice tool. And May of 2008, I published it internally to Microsoft and noticed that everybody loved it, a lot of support. And Chris Ann came to the picture at that time. He saw what I was doing. He apparently loved it. And
it's a fabulous
thing. He said, it's a great idea. And he's like, how can I help you? And then I told him, this is what I really want to do with the long-term vision. I want to bundle this with Windows and make it reach every single person possible. And from there on, Chris helped get this to the Dev Labs. Actually, we started Dev Labs based on Chris's suggestions and talks with the dev, and we are here.
Excellent.
Yep.
So, yeah, I mean, I can completely relate to this story because, you know, when the way I started programming was also in BASIC, so a friend of mine was like, gee, I'm old. It's like, you know, 87 or something. He had a TRS-80 with BASIC.
Yeah. Yep.
And that's, you know, and then he showed me X equals X plus 1. So this example is now used a lot, but this was my example. And I could not understand it. I could not understand what that meant. But that's what I got hooked on BASIC. So that's
absolutely.
It's and also the simplicity, right? If my Apple II, the BASIC manual, that was like one page, and you only had to understand one page instead of, like, you know, what is the C++ language
manual?
Pack, like,
yes,
you know,
yes, exactly.
Thicker cool. than Feynman's Norton.
How many keywords do you have in Small
BASIC? Well, Small BASIC started out V0.1 was 14 keywords, and then I added one more keyword for the next ref. And the else if keyword.
Okay. Do you have the go-to keyword?
Yes, I do have the go-to keyword.
Yeah. Okay.
I got a lot of flack for that, but I have my reasons why.
And do you have dim?
No, I don't have dim.
No dim.
No, yeah. Well, Small Basic is typeless. We'll talk about that. You know?
Okay.
Wow.
So
before I decided to go actually pick on Basic, you know, there was all these other languages, like great languages, Python, Ruby, there's KPL, there's Scratch, Alice, all these different beginner programming languages, and when I wanted to see what would be the best beginner programming language, I went around asking people down the corridors, and I realized that pretty much most of the Microsoft developers that are the expert developers today started programming in some variant of BASIC. Not very surprising. And so if BASIC has been so successful before, I mean, we can definitely build on top of that, right? That's, mm-hmm. that's kind of my idea behind using BASIC. Or beginning programming.
Good. So you want to show us some code?
Oh, absolutely. Sure.
Yeah.
It's,
can we write on that one?
Or
you want to write on
or you want to...
Oh, in projection.
Yeah, just right behind it. It's a very large TV.
Well, fascinating,
Kevin. Bring it up on the monitor.
So I'm curious if there are still line numbers and things like that. All the goodness.
Okay. Well, let's... See over here, this is the environment. One of my intentions is to keep the environment as simple as possible and not have a whole bunch of toolbars. I take Visual Studio as an example. It's a professional developer's environment. It's definitely not geared towards beginners. So this, I feel that this is very inviting and friendly, and there's only very few buttons there. I mean, each of these buttons are very self-explanatory. This is a version that is still under development. I haven't published this yet, so you'll see there are two new buttons. People are watching this who are actually trying to download this. There's two new buttons, import and publish. Mm-hmm. I'm going to turn this off real quick. Okay, there we go. I will talk about the import and publish in a bit. But this is the environment, and the simplest program that you can write here is still the simplest program that you can write back in when you started BASIC. So you can say 10. Actually,
is that font big enough on this side?
It would be nice if it would be a little bit bigger.
Let's see if I can make it.
Because
I'm
starting to get moiré patterns on me. Yeah. Oh, no.
Yeah.
Hard drive.
Look at that.
Look at that.
So, right. Text window. So you notice that. Okay, well, hang on. That's why it's still under development. Things are broken.
That's fine.
I'll just. Bring up the one that I installed from the release bits.
Cool.
There, much better. There you go.
Nice. Yep.
So you can see that as you type, you get a context-sensitive help, which is very similar to the IntelliSense that you get in the video. Except here, the explanation for what you're typing is right here in the IntelliSense window combined. And over on the right side, you see there's yet another help context pane. You'll notice that when I start typing the dot, and when I go look for what follows this text window, you'll notice that here there's also a usage that's given, and then all the arguments, the description of the arguments that you can pass to this operation. So I'm going to go write hello channel 9. And that's my first program, and I can go and run this program, take the cursor and run it, and there we go. So that's the first program you can write. Now, these text window, these are called objects, and they're made available through .NET libraries. And these libraries are extensible, so you can write new ones and throw it in there, and people can be using. So you can think of, there could be a math based library that could allow people to write programs to do all their calculations.
And should you implement any specific interfaces, or is this just...
There's a dev guide where you just have, there's an attribute, and if you attribute a type with that, you will be able to get them to show up inside the IntelliSense in small BASIC.
But you don't show everything by default. You don't grab arbitrary CLR libraries because you want you've talked about this before, you want the feel of small BASIC to be limited.
Exactly.
It's intentionally limited
to
increase the simplicity. It's
exactly.
Not, you know.
Absolutely. And another thing is, you cannot create these libraries from within small BASIC. So small BASIC is limited, and it is intended to be limited. We want people to be able to ramp up to programming really fast. Mm-hmm. And there are some people that may say, oh, okay, I can see the limitations and I want to go further, and that's when you say, oh, there's this Visual Basic, there's C#, there's all of these great programming languages that are around, and now you've graduated to these languages. And then there are a lot of people that are very comfortable just doing the things that Small Basic is capable of doing, and you want to cater to those people too.
So how do you kind of keep the language small? Because already in the other thing you showed, there were like two new buttons, right? So, I mean, they're like, how do you kind of control this kind of feature creep, or that, you know, small BASIC at some point becomes, you know, big BASIC? And,
very hard problem. Very, very hard, because ever since we released Small BASIC out in the web, our forums are being flooded, and every other message that is being created is, I want this new feature in Small BASIC. Can you give me that to me? The next version? You know, I want debugging support. I want to be able to create DirectX controls. recently,
that's awesome.
Someone asked, how can I access databases through Small BASIC? You know, all kinds of...
ORM for Small BASIC.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's been really hard, because... I do want to enable these people to be able to do what they want to do, but at the same time, I want to keep the environment and the language as simple as possible, so it's a constant battle. So only very few features that I think are And I, of course, I go around discussing. Chris has become. Chris has been my mentor.
Actually, I have to stop for 1 second.
Yeah.
I think you're trying to sugarcoat actually one of the things that allows this project to work right now. One of which is it's not funded. This is a personal project of VJ's. It's his own creation that he does in his own time. He gets a lot of support from the company. You know, we're hosting it up on DevLab and stuff. But this is his passion. This is what he loves to do. And he's recruiting other people to do it. But it's because it's his, it's one guy's thing, he can make arbitrary and capricious decisions about what's acceptable and not, which allows it to stay small. It doesn't suffer from the design by committee. And if you've ever tried to influence Vijay to do anything, it's incredibly difficult. So it's, the great thing is, I mean, you're engaged with the community, you talk to the community, you work with them, and so that's a great thing. But it's a little bit like you think about some of these open source projects, and the more successful they are, they're often driven by a single person who you know, and even things like C#, there's clearly a guy who owns C#. Like, I mean, if you want to feature C#, Anders is the guy.
Yep.
It's his thing. And that allows it to be cohesive and coherent. Mm-hmm. That's one of the things I think we often miss on some projects is we let them balloon bigger than one brain can hold.
Definitely. So no extra funding for him.
No. It's a feature. See how I worked that in?
I see where you're getting at. Okay. So...
So let me ask a quick question about the people that you want to use this are people who have zero programming experience,
absolutely,
right? So there's basic principles that they need to understand.
Yes.
Now I would argue that object is a pretty advanced concept.
Uh-huh.
And so when I look at text window dot anything, I mean, how what do you expect people to use this for? If I want to come in and learn how to program, do I want to use Small Basic, or is I want to come in and write a batch file that does something on Windows for some reason, I could do it in Small Basic. Can you explain a little bit about the fundamentals that need to be learned?
So with any programming language, there is certain fundamental concepts that you want to learn. Mm-hmm. There are the concepts of, you know, conditional routing. There's looping. There's you know, of course, the arithmetic expressions that you have to learn to wet your feet in any programming language. Mm-hmm. Now, what we've done is made it as easy as possible, but no simpler. I mean, these are concepts. These are complex concepts that you have to understand to get to the next step. Where objects come in is. I consider of objects as some kind of a bucketing mechanism. So if you think of original QBasic, there were print, read, and peek, and poke. You know, all of these were just available in the global namespace. And unless you know what you're looking for, you really can't find these things. What objects provide us in the case of Small Basic, I mean, do not think of objects as objects, you know, like class and you're instantiating a type, you know, nothing like that. Objects are just containers. There's a text window object, there's a graphic window object, there's a turtle object, there are Flickr objects. These contain things that work on top of the...
So are all your objects like singletons or statics?
Exactly. Okay. They're all just statics.
Okay.
Internally, they're just statics. But we don't want to even expose those concepts.
So there's no virtual methods?
No. There's no derivation.
No.
Yes,
well, you can't allocate a new one. You can't have two text windows.
Yes.
You can't have two graphic windows, which is good.
That's cool.
Simplification.
Yeah. All right. Let's peek at some more code.
Okay. Absolutely. So that's the first Hello World program. And you might have noticed that when I type text window, there's other objects that are available to you. Text window, of course, deals with just textual ASCII characters and brings up in console window. And then there's turtle. Turtle, we try to get the turtle graphics that became very famous with logo and then apply it here. I'll show a little bit of samples there. And then, of course, arrays, clock, desktop, a dictionary. Guess what this dictionary does?
Keeps all your pairs.
Stores information.
Hopefully, it's spell checks.
A dictionary can get a definition of a word.
Lovely.
So it's what you'd expect it to be.
Exactly.
Well, it's what humans would expect it to be, not what programmers would expect.
Yes. And then, of course, there's Flickr and all that. So now let's go back and write. I'll open up some samples here. So.
Fractals?
fractals.
Yeah, fractals are a basic concept we expect all developers.
Well, it's just, you know, iteration and
recursion.
Recursion.
Yeah.
Basic concept.
It's not real.
Yes.
I hear someone in the back of the interwebs yelling to
absolutely.
Zoom.
Absolutely.
I can't read this.
Is that better?
Yeah, it's lovely.
All right. So you'll notice here that we are using graphics window for this, and these are properties that you can set values. So this is how you set a color, and we actually do all kinds of type parsing and set the value. So there, by the way, Small Basic is a typeless language. There's no real types. There's no differentiation between strings or numbers. We, based on the data, that we coerce these types, and then we perform the arithmetic or logical operations. So we're setting pen colors, and then you notice that we're doing a mouse move on the right side. We're assigning on mouse down to mouse down, and on the right side you'll see that this mouse down is actually an event. And Small Basic also exposes .NET events via a very, very constrained delegate, a callback. And the way you would handle these events is by creating a subroutine. So, for example, you see there's onKeyDown. onKeyDown is a subroutine, and you assign that subroutine to the KeyDown event. And what happens is, when any time a key is pressed on the graphics window, this subroutine gets called. You can, at any given time, there can only be one subroutine assigned to an event. And you can change these subroutines assigned to the event, but
No multicast delegates.
Just very, very simple. And also, you'll notice that the subroutines do not really take any arguments. Now, the reason why that's so is because all the variables that you actually use inside the program are global. There's no scopes. So I wanted to avoid this concept of scoping. You don't have to learn the concept of scoping to be able to create programs.
So you can't create variables in general.
Only global variables.
All variables are global. So
that is a place that you deviate. I mean, if I was to think about the basic version of this, they would have done this as a number routine and then have a return.
A ghost of a return.
Exactly.
And so why subroutines?
I thought subroutines were a little more concise and clear than go sub and a return, because when you have a go sub, there's a lot of places you can return from depending on where you go to.
Yeah.
I wanted to prevent that from happening and just have one return point. So when you want to think about a subroutine, you would see that, oh, it starts with a sub and then it ends with an end sub.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. And so it makes this clear distinction of this whole block is a subroutine, instead of having the user to go and figure out, my go sub starts here. You can actually go sub to any number.
Oh, yeah. No, the other thing I like about it is it puts people more in line with modern programming languages.
Oh, absolutely.
It gets them on track. Like, if they learn the concept, they can apply it immediately to Visual Basic or to C#, because this is like...
But, I mean, why would you choose... I mean, that's a great question. Why would you choose subroutine and not, like, method or function? I mean, subroutine, again, that sort of lingo is like, if you're not a programmer, it's subroutine.
That's actually a good point, yeah.
I mean, function is like more, even if you've done math, most people take math in high school, you know what a function is. I'm not talking about functional programming. I'm talking about something
very different, and I think it's...
Okay, fine. I mean, I'm just thinking...
No, but that's a good question.
Or even block or chunk, or like, I can think of other names and I can apply to this, right? Like, it's interesting to think
about.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
It's a good, yeah. It's a great point. And so why is endif with lowercase?
Oh, so it's just how I typed it. You know, the endifs are actually, keywords are case insensitive, by the way.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. And these, the parentheses are actually unnecessary. Mm-hmm. It's just my... You know, my
so
coder...
You're really programming C#.
Yeah. So it just kind of shows up when I write these programs. Absolutely not necessary at all. So you notice that since we're not passing any arguments, it brings the user to think about naturally where would they go to access some of the properties that they are going to use. So, for instance, there's this last key property on top of graphics window, which stores the last key that was pressed. And it's not just only valuable within this subroutine. You can access it from anywhere. Mm-hmm. See what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So what we've done here is handle the mouse down, mouse move, and key down. And on key down, we change the color of the pen of the graphics window. and on mouse down and mouse move, we store some points, and then we draw lines to the new points. And let's go and find out what this program does. So I can mouse down, and I can draw.
Nice.
And I can press the key 1. I'm going to press 1, and I can draw in a different color. 2, another color, and 3. Right? So this is a sample program that we ship with Small Basic, and if what our expectation is that kids would or beginners would look at this program and then follow the pattern. So here I can go and add, copy this, paste it here, and then say, if I want digit 4, I can make this yellow, right? And now when I run this and hit 4, that's yellow.
So here's one thing I would have expected if you're going for the beginners, right, that you would have a REPL loop, that you don't have to have this concept of editing and running, that, you know, it would be super interactive.
Oh, yes, absolutely. So I would like to take Small Basic to that point. Of course, this is, you know,
another
point in time. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I think one thing is also, and which I love about this, is one of the things we've seen as people have gotten engaged is, you know, back in the day when we all learned BASIC, a console window was kind of the height of technology.
Yeah.
And now I think when people think about writing programs, they want to build things that look like the programs they use. So like the graphics windows that you draw on and things like that. And I actually am a little challenged in thinking about how you do a REPL window around modern GUIs that are, you know, event-driven and things like that.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so I actually love the idea of the REPL loop. I totally would love to see it as well. I'm torn with like how you make it work with a GUI programming environment. Yeah. It's a little challenging.
It's a little technologically technically challenging and also hard. So,
but I can think of some stuff.
Okay.
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
I have some ideas now.
Yeah,
now that we talked
right.
Perfect.
And
perfect.
If, you know, if you look at like, you know, the Iron Python demos and F Sharp and so on, they have like, you know.
Well, the thing that the flexibility we have that I didn't think about before was that because your graphics window is a singleton,
yeah,
you don't have to host it as an out of proc top level window, so it could actually be a graphics window be a pain in the IDE. So it's not a traditional REPL where your response is right in line, but rather that REPL is going against that graphics window on the right hand side
in the same process.
Yes. In the same process.
Yes. Yeah, I got it.
Yeah, you could do some interesting things.
Yeah, that'll be
very cool.
Yeah. So
look at that.
That's interesting. That's cool. So
magic happens on camera, man.
Yeah. For now, what we're
you
actually...
You looking for a job?
Yes, no funding, though.
Yeah,
we'll pay you. For now, what really happens in the compiler is we actually have a .NET-based compiler that compiles this to an IL and executable, and you do get the PDBs. Of course, we don't have the debugging support yet. We plan to introduce that.
Well, I think, like, you know, creating, you know, debug points and stuff like that's a little outside the scope of, but at some point it does actually, it's an interesting question. What's the transition that you're expecting people to go from here? I mean, at some point, you know, let's say you have a 12-year-old who's really, really interested, smart, you know, creative.
Yeah.
He's going to get through this pretty quickly, or she's going to get through this pretty quickly. And
absolutely.
Go like, what's next? And so, is there a logical jump up? Can you go from this to programming in VisualBasic.net, for example?
Yeah, so that's
why you
like
use Sharp.
that's kind of like the ramp up that we plan to provide. One of the things, the ideas we were talking about earlier was to have an export to VB a button, like a toolbar button that says, okay, well, I'm done with this. I want to move to the next, export all my programs to VB.
Nice.
Or export this particular program to VB, and then I can go to VB, and then I can do more interesting things using all the richness of .NET libraries. So this, to me, this is like a very protected sandbox of the .NET libraries. And when you have graduated the sandbox, then you have the full power of all the .NET libraries, and then you got to use the Visual Basic environment. I am talking with the VB folks. They have some really pretty interesting ideas of what they should be doing to make VB accessible to beginners. So when these two curves merge, I think then we'll have this really nice smooth transition.
But in some sense, you know, like doing like Flickr.random picture. I mean, that's something that's in normal VB or C Sharp is much harder, right? So, hey, I would love to use this.
Yeah, interesting. These things are not in the library, yes. So which means these are accessible. So if you just take the small basic library and then throw it into Visual Basic in a project and you add a reference to it, you get all these goodness over there. It'll be a little cumbersome to use because, you know, since small basic is typeless, we have this thing called a primitive type at the back end. So you'll have to do all kinds of,
long-lived variant.
Yes, variant, yes. Long-lived variant, yes, absolutely. It would never die. I tell you, it's never going to die. So, cool. So the program we have up there that Eric was talking about is this very simple program. It's like, all it does, it should be pretty self-explanatory, gets a random picture tagged Rainier from Flickr, and then does desktop.set wallpaper. So you notice that over here, we don't really care about what kind of data that we actually fetch. And over here, again, people don't have to worry about what kind of data we fetch. In fact, what we fetch here internally is the URL for the picture. And over here, set wallpaper can take either a URL or a file location or a network location, and it would convert it to the right picture type, and then put it in a temporary location, and then change the registry key to go actually pick that picture and set it as a desktop wallpaper, so users don't have to know any of these things. So let's go ahead and run this program and quickly minimize this. And you'll notice that I have a lot of windows.
Yes.
And there's Rainier. If you haven't seen really execute, I'm going to execute this again, so you'll notice that there's a different picture. Okay, that's not really working. Yeah. End program. I'll run this again. And we'll wait for a couple minutes there. There we go. Apparently this is tagged as Rainier on Flickr. Now, imagine going back to this program and then... So, go up here and say for I equals 1 to 100 or 200 and 4. And now when I run this program, you will get a slideshow happening on your desktop without having to install Windows 7.
Although you're running the
I am running Windows 7, yes. There, that's a slideshow, and it's like...
Then that's really that's
like
awesome.
Four lines,
yes.
Yeah.
That is really, really awesome. Yes. It's the simplicity is amazing.
Exactly. And kids today, they want to do these kind of things. And they're on Messenger, they have their Facebook account, and they want to be able to access. I think programming, if it has to be fun and approachable to beginners of today, it has to jive with them. They have to be able to talk to them in what day-to-day things that they do. So I plan to add more of these kind of libraries to make it more fun.
Excellent.
Yeah. Fabulous.
Very nice.
Let's go ahead and stop that program.
But just let's kind of, you know, let me play here the like the concerned parent. So if you're kind of allowing them to do this now, you know, you say, oh, there's going to change, this program's going to change registry keys and so on. So how do you prevent, you know, like these beginners to mess up their whole machines by kind of, you know, running, you know, programs where they don't really may not understand kind of what effects it has on the system, or maybe they will wipe out their hard drives or...
Okay, that's a hard question. I don't really have an answer to this.
You don't have code access security or anything.
One of the big things is it has a very nice code access security model in the fact that you can't do a lot. Like, it turns out it's not unconstrained registry access, it's desktop.setwallpaper.
Okay.
Because the primitives aren't exposed, you actually can sandbox much more effectively. Now, I don't remember where we are, but if we have a file I.O. library or not.
Yeah, we do have a file I.O. library. Yeah. That's what I was like.
No, so that's a good example about, you know, ideally the file I.O. library, there's no reason why you'd want to give them access to the hard drive. You may just want to give them access to the desktop or access to their My Documents directory. And it's things like that where, because this is not the generic .NET API, we can make... Again, arbitrary and capricious decisions about how we use.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, again, by the library author has the discretion of what they want to include in their libraries. Now, you can also ask the question, okay, well, you can expect the kid to open up command prompt and then go and do a deli
okay.
Star dot star, right?
Yes.
If they know that command, they can just go ahead and do that.
Yeah.
There's this Vista's really nice security model that prevents you from doing that unless you're in the right location. So these programs are also .NET Live programs, and they're also running inside this user sandbox
okay.
mode. So, you know, you can apply those kind of security for programs in Small Basic, too.
So it's yes, it's interesting now that you bring it up. Is one of the things I was thinking is you should the delete. It should actually do a safe delete where it puts it into the trash can.
Oh,
so you can undelete.
Good,
yeah,
that's a good
which
idea.
Is one of the things where like the .NET library delete really deletes
yes.
it. It's gone.
Yes.
It
yeah.
doesn't put it in the.
Oh yeah,
it doesn't
absolutely.
Do
a
safe
follow.
Okay.
Yeah.
All
right.
Anyway,
that's a good point. That's a great point.
It's a
so they
story.
Already
two ideas.
Two more features. Expert to expert. Man.
Yeah.
So you. Oh, I'm sorry. I was going to say, from a programming language designer, what's your, you know, what's going on here, man? What do you think?
Well, so the things, what I think in the beginning, Vijay said it really kind of very well. It's like we are building layers and layers of abstraction where, you know, kind of the underlying machine gets further and further away. And so if you just want to play, if you want to learn, you know, you don't want to have a lot of these abstractions. You want to have abstractions like this, where you can say Flickr don't get random picture. That's the kind of abstractions you want. But you don't want virtual methods, objects, all that stuff. You want the kind of operational semantics of your program to be really easy. So I think this is really nice.
Yeah.
On the other hand, you might say, you know, the fact that all variables are global, maybe kind of, you know, you're teaching them kind of, you know, the wrong approach. But again, you know, but again, it's like hard to, you know, because on the other hand, you know, global variables are something that's very intuitive and,
exactly.
and you know, that's very easy to learn. So often, you know, it's like, do you give your kids candy or only carrots? You know, it's like kids sometimes want candy, even though that's not always healthy. So I think global variables.
But that's a really, really, really good point, though, right? Because if you start developing patterns of behavior
yeah.
early enough, it could be that when you get up to the point where you're writing a real Windows application, where you start, you know, in the back, you know, everything you learned in kindergarten. Remember that?
Yeah,
about,
yeah, yeah,
it
yeah
certainly
yeah.
isn't the case about programming, but. It is. That's a very, very
yeah.
interesting point.
Yeah,
I
agree with you. There's a lot of people that have raised concern about the programming practices. Especially the Go-To has been pretty. it had its share of publicity. I think that introducing these things in the simplest possible way is of a higher priority. And then when people actually learn these concepts, then they can definitely go back and say, oh, you know, there are better ways of
yes,
doing this.
Yeah.
Then you know both of these ways. I definitely don't agree with learning something without understanding why we're doing this. Say, for example, a lot of people today, when they go to computer science and their CS 101, they start learning Java. And they put their imports, they put their static class, and you know all of these things by nature. They don't
yep.
realize why they have to put those things. I remember when I was writing my GW Basic program, and I came to a point where I had to store records, and I wanted to associate their two multiple arrays of data, but I want to associate them together and keep them as one record. And then I was like looking for what can I do, and then I stumbled upon records. And then I realized, I can combine all these data together and keep them together. And then at that point, I realized, okay, this is exactly what records are meant for and use them in the right way. If I had just been given records, and this is how you use it, this is what you'll do with it, I may not even understand the need for records or need for classes or types or objects.
Yeah,
so,
I think that's a good point. And like, I mean, we made a joke before about virtual calls and so on, but I think go-tos, you know, are easier to understand if you, like, you know, if you write a program that all relies on virtual calls, there's even more spaghetti code going
oh,
on
yeah.
under the covers than the go-tos where you can see what's going on.
Yeah. And when you think about the the people who do this list is like, if you ask anybody to write a list of steps to do something, they're going to say, okay, first you do this,
yes.
Second you do this,
yep.
Third, you know, oh, well, if you don't have a car, well, then skip to step 8.
Yes.
And then
yep.
Otherwise, here's step, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Yep.
And I think that's a very intuitive and understandable thing where, yeah, virtual dispatch is no human should ever understand.
Exactly.
Like, I mean, it's yep. a pretty bizarre concept. It turns out useful in programming, but it's not exactly intuitive.
Yeah. So how do you do go-tos now that we talk about it? So how do you do labels and stuff?
Okay. So let's say instead of having a for loop here, we could use a while loop here. So I can say while I. Okay.
Ooh, aggressive statement completion.
There we go.
Nice.
While I is less than 200. And then go and say end while. Over here, if I have another condition, so I can go and say, well, if I is equal to 20, then I can do something here.
Okay.
So,
and can you jump back into the loop?
Yes, you can jump back into the loop.
And because all variables are global, you don't have a problem.
Yes. You don't have a problem.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, yeah, there's no variable scoping.
Yep.
Go to back end.
There we go.
Good.
So, yes, this is possible. Definitely, this is, here's the thing. This kind of spaghetti code is even possible in C#.
Yeah.
Right, so you can jump back and forth. And, yeah, C# also has the go-to keyword. Definitely, there are some things about the language that you have to step up, and if you want to go to the next step, you want to learn professional programming,
VJ,
there are guidelines that you...
I have one piece of bad news.
Yes.
I see from the time that we have to get to another building in 15 minutes for a presentation that I know
yes.
you have to be at.
Yes, absolutely.
So,
great.
We may have to wrap up.
Yeah, absolutely.
Unless you'd like to continue without us.
So maybe we should wrap up by, you know, do you have anything kind of new in the pipeline?
I showed a little bit of two new commands that we were talking mm-hmm. about in the toolbar, the publish and import. I want to just give a little bit of glimpse of mm-hmm. what's coming for the next release. I have this working at the moment, so I expect this for the next release. So can we take a quick look at what this is? So imagine I wrote a program. Today, so this is the paddle game program that I have, and I'll just zoom this a little bit here.
Thanks.
And this is a really simple game. It's got some sounds and, you know, has some interactions.
I spent
like that.
Hours and hours playing this.
it's a really simple bomb game. Now, if I want to send this to my friend and have him or her play this game today, I have to copy this entire program, paste it in an email, and send it over, and then on the other side, you copy back and do the programming. Today, what I can do with the next release is publish. And this is a very simple, no input required command. And your program gets published onto the web, and you're given an ID. And this is the ID that you have to now communicate with your friend. And on the other side, say, I go and say import, and I give my ID, and say OK, and I get that program. It's the same program that gets, you know, using web services on the web. And
software plus services.
Oh,
yeah.
That's
absolutely.
Hot.
Right on.
So
I haven't seen that yet. So that was
This is brand new. A lot of times people post code in the forums, and they copy and paste the code in the forums, and, you know, sometimes the forum code gets messed up, and when they copy paste, it doesn't run the way it was intended. And
can you
re-import
to the same address?
You can re-import any number of times.
But can you re-import to the same address?
What does that mean?
So when I post back, because you gave me a unique ID,
Yes.
Can I post to that unique ID
again? No, every single published will give you a new ID.
Oh, that might be nice.
Yeah.
I think about that.
So,
can you write a program that kind of imports random numbers?
programs are published. Absolutely, you can write that in small basic. Absolutely. So, and the plan I have to use this import feature is so I can go ahead and import Tetris. So imagine we're teaching programming out there, teaching to a bunch of people. Instead of asking them to go open this file at this location, network chat location, all I say, just import the Tetris program. And you hit OK, and you get a Tetris program, which when I run, I get a nice Tetris program.
Wow, there will be kind of a run on these names, just like on internet domain.
Yeah,
I want to,
you'll have a registrar service.
Yes,
absolutely. So this is
very cool.
This is what we have coming in the pipeline.
Very good.
Well, hey, man.
Cool.
Well, thanks a lot. I don't want to keep you from your important meeting.
This is a meeting to get funding for this.
Exactly.
Bill's come in especially.
We fly him in to talk about Small Basic. The
plane is controlled by Small Basic.
Excellent.
Airplane.fly.
Nice.
It's that easy. Okay.
Great job, guys.
Thank you.
Very, very interesting.
Thank you, Eric.
Thanks.
All right.
See ya.
Okay, see you next time.